Ladies and gentlemen, once again, live on Aeroshell Square. I'm standing here right now with Commander Carl Rausch, and he is with the F-18C that you see out here. A lot of people have been asking you, is this a Russian airplane? What's your stock answer, Carl?
No, it's not a Russian airplane, but it's painted to look like one. We're an aggressor squadron, so we play the role of bad guy. This actual paint job is modeled after a Sukhoi of the Northern Forces for the Russians. And so we will go out there and mimic what they do for our fleet forces out there to train them up.
And this is part of your training that you undergo as part of the adversary squadron, is to learn the tactics and learn the techniques that are flown by adversary squadrons from many different countries, and then employ them against our own aircraft so that they can learn exactly what to expect in the skies against an adversary like that.
That's correct. All of our pilots actually go through a six-week course out at the Navy Fighter Weapons School, Top Gun, to train up to do that. And so it's good training, and it provides a real good service for our fleet.
How many aircraft are actually part of the adversary squadron, and what's the range of aircraft?
We've got all F-18Cs. We have 12 of them assigned. We actually have 10 of them. These airplanes also are going through rework facilities to keep them. This airplane was built in the early 90s. And so to keep it going, we've sent them off to rework facilities every once in a while.
You're actually making the major transition now into the digital age with the earlier built models of the Hornet, right?
Yes, we previously had F-18As, and those were upgraded to A-pluses, and they were able to carry all the avionics or all the weapon systems that the newer airplanes have, and got a new lease on life. And there's a fleet squadron in NAS Oceania that is now flying our A-pluses, and we took their F-18Cs.
You also have the digital radar now on these machines, don't you? Was that upgraded at the same time?
No, we still have the original radar that the airplane came out with.
With a mechanical scan?
Yes.
Okay, and that radar dish, incidentally, is mounted in the nose of the aircraft, and they can look forward, they can look backwards if they look down between their feet, but you're still able to track multiple targets simultaneously.
Yes, we can.
I was talking a few moments ago with the driver of the F-18F, which is the bigger brother, the Super Hornet, to the Hornet. That was quite a transition, and a lot of people don't realize how much bigger the F model is than the C. I would have loved to have seen them side by side, although the paint jobs can make them look very different too, right?
Yes, that's true. But yes, he is quite a bit bigger. He's got different intakes on him. He's got a different wing. I'm sure you saw the leading edge extension on him is quite different. His tail surfaces are a lot, so it's a bigger aircraft overall. Carries more fuel, has better range for that reason.
Difference in thrust between the two aircraft?
He does have more thrust, but he also has more weight he has to push around, so it's not that big a difference when you have the thrust-to-weight ratio, though.
Talk a little bit about the adversary squadron for a moment, and I might point out that the crew for this aircraft that are here are all from the Naval Reserve at Oceana in Virginia. And tell me a little bit about the Naval Reserve and how you get to fly these on weekends.
Well, you do an active duty tour. I did 11 years, and then after 11 years, and then came to VFC 12 as a reservist, which means I have another job, and Cuz over here has another job as well. It's kind of fitting, actually, that the other airplane I fly is sitting right in front of us. I'm a captain for JetBlue Airways, flying the E-190s as well, so I get to do both. It's kind of a neat thing to do. And we just have to bide our time between that job and this job to keep both current in both aircraft and to provide what we need to for our services to the fleet. We'll do detachments, and we'll go down to Key West or Fallon, Nevada. We'll do things out of Oceania. We were in Savannah, Georgia right before this. And the squadron is only manned with about 7 full-time individuals. And everybody else has to be made up with reservists. So there's a big commitment from the part-time guys to come out and help out with all that. And so it takes a bit more time. And when I go home from that job, it's not to go home and relax. It's to go home to this job and fly this job as well. So it's a lot of time of work. But as you can tell from the airplane, it's a bit of fun. So I don't mind it at all.
Part of the curriculum, of course, is carrier landings and takeoffs. That's got to be fun in an aircraft that's as powerful as the Hornet is. And I know it looks like a postage stamp there when you're looking at it from the sky coming towards us. Talk a little bit about carrier operations.
Well, the carrier operations are that is the meat and potatoes of the Navy. That's what makes us different, makes us be able to go anywhere in the world and deploy force anywhere in the world at any time. And it's nice because, most of the world's covered by the oceans, and so we can have a flexibility that our counter service can't really employ. the carrier landings themselves make it different. If you saw the landing gear on this airplane, much, much more robust than, say, the F-16 over there, or even if you see an
F-15.
And so the stresses on the airplane are one thing. Training-wise, you do a lot of carrier landing practices at the field, you know, before you actually go out to the ship. And then the ship, it's quite intense. It really is. I didn't have any gray hair before I started doing night traps. And so somehow after the night traps, I started developing the gray hair. But at the same token, it's an awesome capability, and it's something that nobody else does. So we do take quite a bit of pride in the fact that we can land this on a carrier, and the other services can't.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to mention, in fact, that the United States Navy is the only service in the world that conducts night operations from carriers.
Actually, the French, I think, are doing that right now as well. They would be the only
other ones. They have started, huh?
Yes.
Okay, but what aircraft are they utilizing?
They're using Rafales and Super Retinards.
Okay.
They also fly E-2 Hawkeyes, the same aircraft that we have for the airborne early warning. Now, if you're talking about other countries, that's true. The Russians have been trying to get their carrier back out, and they've been doing it in very, very limited numbers. Limited number of airplanes airborne at one time, and they have not done the night thing at all. And that's been it's been bread and butter for the Navy for a long time. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the Gulf missions, a lot of the aircraft that are being flown are carrier aircraft off the boat at night. Seems the Air Force guys don't want to land on that long runway in the daytime.
Yeah. I can't make any comment about that because I've got guys that have got knives that are close behind me. But I've actually been aboard a carrier at sea and witnessed the night operations, and it's truly amazing. There's a bunch of 18-year-olds out there running around that deck, all with different colored helmets, different colored jackets on. Each of them have an assigned job. There's purple, there's green, there's yellow, there's red, and you know which is which by looking at them out there. But it is truly amazing the way that they maneuver these aircraft around the deck, particularly taxiing. You've got wheels that are 12 inches from the edge, and all that's telling you where to go is an 18-year-old out there with a Simulum stick saying, turn now.
Yes, that's correct. There's one kid I like to point out, and I'm talking kid in just general terms. His job is when the aircraft lands, you go to full power when you're caught in the wires. So you have an aircraft that's at full power being held by the wire. His job is to run out in front of you and tell you to pull your power back. And he does that at night. And he's also standing right next to the landing area. So if something were to happen, he's in a very bad spot. And so he'll come out, and then he taxis you out, like you said. And at night, sometimes when you taxi up to the bow, all you can actually see are the two yellow wands. You can't see the water, you can't see the deck, you can't see anything but two yellow wands. So you do implicitly have your life in their hands, but they're great American kids, and they're doing an awesome job. And if you ever meet a kid that works on a carrier flight deck, you need to shake his hand or her hand and congratulate them. They are great Americans.
You're absolutely right. And let me just clarify that a little bit. When they come down and land on that carrier deck, in order for the engines to spool up properly, to have enough thrust developed for them to make a departure in case they do miss all the wires, which you never do, then they need to be at full power as the wheels touch the deck. And it's only when the hook has grabbed one of those four wires that they finally get a signal from in front saying back off the power, and they come back out of afterburner, and the aircraft then is brought to a complete halt. But if they do miss altogether, the sound you hear is bolter, 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 which means you better get your backside off that deck in a big, big hurry. And it truly is, as you said, it's one of the most exciting phases of aviation, and also one of the most dangerous, I would guess.
Yes, it definitely is that. Luckily, we've made it a lot safer, and used to be years back, you'd go on cruise and you'd lose people. And I went on two cruises, and we never lost anybody. We had some incidents that happened, but we never lost any of the sailors or any of the pilots or anybody in the crew. So that was a fantastic thing. And it's just a true testament to the professionalism of those kids that are out there and doing their job and doing it correctly and doing it responsibly. So it is an awesome thing to see.
Once again, you fly normally during the week, except for your 2 weeks every now and then, in the cockpit of the JetBlue aircraft over here. The flight experience obviously is totally different and requires two different approaches to it. But other than flight operations, which is what you're involved in directly, what are the career availabilities in the Naval Reserve?
Well, we do have other jobs out there that we have centers that people will mobilize if they have to. And what they do is they're ready to go off in, like, for instance, Iraq right now. We've got a lot of reservists that are on the ground in Iraq that are doing jobs, and they're actually embedded with a lot of Army units. And they come from different reserve centers throughout the country, and they get mobilized, trained up in an Army unit, and go deploy. And so they're filling a huge need out there. We also have some forces that are out that'll do harbor security, so they can deploy and do harbor security. We also have a number of Seabees construction battalions that mobilize out, and they will do, obviously, construction work. They're the guys that are building schools and rebuilding, you know, water treatment facilities and whatnot. So there's a huge need for the Naval Reserve, and it's filling a very good, doing a very good job right now of helping out, especially with the war on terror.
Thank you very much indeed, Carl.
Thank you.